Now it's time to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords. And Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena. And did you know it's Happy National Absinthe Day today?
Excuse me? You can't
the green drink.
Oh, goodness. It's too early.
It is too early.
Sorry, is your computer giving you an update?
Yeah, fun fact. Just letting you know.
Thank you.
Not a favorite of that drink, by the way.
I was going to say, it's pretty nasty.
It is pretty nasty. Very high alcohol content.
Happy Tuesday. You drink
it. It's a happy Tuesday. That's important. Yeah.
All right, let's get started. The medical strike still looms large as a medical vacuum becomes an increasing concern for the country. Our first keyword of the day.
Long-term solution.
So despite government pressure, many residents are still not returning to work. The government is now taking steps to deal with a prolonged medical vacuum. So what's the latest, Adam?
Yeah, so I think the government is basically coming to terms with the fact that, their pressure and their threats of legal action aren't really, they're falling on deaf ears, basically. A lot of residents are still on strike, leaving their positions. Now, the government is planning to suspend, in accordance with that, the medical licenses of doctors and trainees doctors who haven't come back, starting with leaders of the doctors' groups. There's already been some legal action for them, and moving on to others who didn't return as well. Now, the health ministry said it started taking procedures to suspend the licenses of around 7,000 trainee doctors who are still not returning to work. Now, the government is preparing for also the long-term absence of residents by strengthening emergency response systems, allowing telemedicine or expanding it, as well as giving money to hospitals to hire more staff and letting nurses do more tasks as well. There was a whole issue about the scope and role of nurses before, so it's coming into the limelight again. Now, four regional emergency situation rooms have also been established in Seoul, Daejeon, Daegu, and Gwangju to ensure that ER patients are transferred to appropriate medical institutions in a timely manner. There's been cases where a lot of sick patients and those needing urgent care had to wait for literally hours or traveled hours because of the lack of personnel and hospitals, basically, because they were just simply short staffed. Now, the government is also conducting site inspections for the second day today to check whether residents have returned to work as well. So they are still cracking down, but they are also realizing that their efforts might not work. So they're trying to make some other resolutions and solutions to kind of a prolonged medical vacuum that the country is facing at the moment.
Because medical license suspension is something that the government will also more closely look into. That doesn't solve the issue at hand, the continued medical vacuum, right? So how do we ensure that patients are well taken care of in between? Leave it there for now as we turn our attention to our second keyword, plans to invest in Daegu's infrastructure, our second keyword of the day.
Daegu support.
So President Yoon has visited Daegu, where he pledged a bold support to upgrade the city's infrastructure, including the opening of a new airport by 2030. We say 2030 like that's years away. It is, but only six, and we're talking about airports.
Yeah, that's right. So it is a short amount of time to build an airport within that time. And he said a first step towards this end is to hasten the construction of that new Daegu Gyeongbuk integrated airport. It will be linked to a new high-speed rail line and a private expressway, each stretching from Daegu to upper counties in the wider North Gyeongsang province. Now, it will replace the aged civilian Daegu International Airport and a military air base, so basically sprucing up and expanding on those. Now, Yoon further plans to significantly expand support for Daegu's high-tech industries as well, including robotics and future mobility. He announced a 200 billion won investment in a robot testing field in Taesung County. The facility will enable companies to assess and validate the safety and functionality of the robots. He also plans to make Susong Alpha City a hub for AI and big data research. Yoon also said that he would ensure that Daegu and other provincial areas can enjoy the benefits of the increase in medical school admissions quotas. Mm-hmm. He discussed making Pangongsan a new tourism destination with 100 billion won in infrastructure investments and designating Dongsangno as a tourism zone as well. A national musical complex and a modern art museum are also planned. So this all came in this government public debate that Yoon has been undergoing, and I think it's the 16th of its kind, and it's spreading to other regions outside of the capital region. And a lot of these infrastructure pledges, especially in Daegu, comes, of course, as Daegu is what's known as a TK region. It's a very it's a conservative stronghold. So does he have the April general elections in mind with making these what he calls bold support pledges? Of course, that is one possibility. But yeah, so Daegu, of course, it is a major city in Korea. Of so there has been kind of some criticisms that Daegu is possibly falling behind, say, of course, Seoul and Busan as well, in terms of, you know, renovating the city and expanding infrastructure there, and that it's a bit outdated in its infrastructure. So making good on his campaign pledges in trying to, you know, spruce up the city as well. So, yeah, so bold support pledges being made by the president for Daegu.
All right, let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
Freedom Shield.
So South Korea and the United States began their annual Freedom Shield joint military drills yesterday to bolster readiness against North Korea. What's the latest?
Right, so the 11-day drills will integrate elements of live exercises with constructive simulations or computer-based simulations. The exercises will focus on deterring North Korea's nuclear threat. Of course, the joint exercises may trigger Pyongyang to respond with additional military provocations. Now, Seoul and Washington also kicked off their 5-day buddy squadron aerial exercise at Osan Air Base in Pyeongtaek in conjunction with Freedom Shield. The joint air drills, which run to Friday, will mobilize some 20 fighter jets, including South Korean F-15Ks and US F-16s. In the past, the two allies often didn't disclose their body squadron exercise until after it took place. So announcing that it is happening before goes to show that the Yoon administration is doubling down on its hard line stance against North Korea. Now, amid concerns of provocative acts by North Korea, South Korean and U.S. reconnaissance aircraft were spotted flying over South Korea in apparent missions to, of course, monitor the north. A U.S. RC-135E plane, which took off from Okinawa in Japan, and a South Korean RQ-4 Global Hawk unmanned aircraft was seen flying over waters off the western coast and Gyeonggi province as well. Of course, no provocations yet from North Korea, but we'll have to keep our eyes open, and it is most likely that they may conduct some sort of military provocation, just we don't know what type.
So keeping close tabs on that. And moving on to our next keyword on the Constitutional Court's ruling on the maximum amount of working hours, our fourth keyword of the day.
Work week
should be short and sweet.
Yes, I agree.
Now, the Constitutional Court has ruled that limiting the maximum working hours to 52 hours a week does not violate the Constitution. So they're upholding the 52-hour work week system despite calls to maybe make it more flexible depending on industries. But they're saying this is the basic minimum safety net, if you will.
Yeah, so the decision was unanimous. The nine judges ruled that the Labour Standards Act, Article 53, Section 1, specifying that the 52-hour workweek system is legitimate and appropriate as it is designed to protect the health and safety of workers by reducing actual working hours and discouraging overtime work on holidays. Now, the law was revised in March 2018 to limit working hours to a maximum of 52 hours a week in order to shorten actual working hours and reduce working on holidays. Now, the court explained that employers and workers may face restrictions on their freedom of contract and occupation hindered by the 52-hour workweek system, but that the need to resolve the long-standing problem of long working hours was greater. Now, the government has introduced various measures to lessen the impact on workers and companies, so the court believes this rule is fair. Now, the court also pointed out that it's crucial to change the culture of working too many hours, even if workers earn less because they work fewer hours. Giving them more rest time is seen as more important. Now, the complaint against this rule was made by both employers and employees. They argued that the rule about the lowest amount of money that can be paid to workers, or minimum wage, limits freedom and is against the constitution. But the court said this complaint wasn't valid because the issue comes from the minimum wage set by the government every year, not directly from the law itself. So this may be the ruling may be a bit of a win for the union administration trying to push for that flexible work week. So we'll have to see what repercussions this has and what kind of other backlash it may face going forward.
All right, moving on to our final keyword this morning. China's biggest, arguably, political gathering of the year, two sessions, kicks off as the world closely monitors, well, what the rubber stamp government has out on its agenda. Our final keyword of the day.
National People's Congress.
So China's National People's Congress will hold its annual meeting in Beijing starting today. The government is under massive pressure to come up with better solutions for its troubled economy. What does it have planned? What sort of resolutions can they come up with, realistically speaking? Thousands will be attending.
That's right. So it's where Chinese leaders and nearly 3,000 delegates come together to discuss not just the economy, but other issues as well. This meeting is part of what's known as the two sessions, which kicks off China's basically political season. The NPC is where China talks about big issues like the economy and plans for dealing with other countries as well, namely, almost noticeably, relations with the US. Now, a lot of people are paying extra attention this year to what China will say about its economy, because there have been concerns about how it's doing. But Beijing said that the country's Premier Li Qiang would not be holding a news conference at the end of the NPC, which is a bit of a disappointment to many media outlets, for one, because a lot of questions will be unanswered, basically. So this means that the rest of the world will be left in the dark about China's economic situation and outlook. But there will be kind of announcements made by the Premier during the meeting, but the Premier just won't be answering any reporters' questions. So any detailed analysis is looking a bit unlikely at the moment. Now, even though China's economy has some challenges, the government might still aim for around a 5% growth rate this year, just like last year. But some experts and watchers think it might only grow about by about 4.6% because of those challenges. Now, how much China plans to spend on its military is also something people are looking at closely. They've been increasing their defense budget for the last few years. There's questions around whether that may be one of the reasons why China's economy is struggling a little bit. Now, the government is also expected to talk about how it plans to boost the economy, especially focusing on high-tech industries and encouraging people to spend more money inside China. Consumption is down by a lot in the country. Another reason behind the kind of slagging economy there. Another big topic could be Taiwan as well, especially with new leadership coming in there that China isn't too happy about as well. So we'll have to wait and see what the kind of reports come out concerning the meeting, but no official statements will be coming out from the top leaders like the Premier Li Keqiang this year, which will be the first in a very long time. So is there a reason behind why the Premier won't be holding a news conference? Are they not confident in basically any economic support measures? Is another kind of speculation and question that many critics are having. That's we'll have to see what comes out.
Not playing by at least the rules that we're familiar with in a democracy, right? I mean, it just seems that maybe Xi Jinping might be wanting to tighten the reins on the narrative that is widespread in China too, which might have something to do with consumption levels, but we'll leave it there for now because there's a host of economic crises, I suppose, the country faces. Thank goodness we have other measurements to better understand the situation in China.
Yeah. So, of course, China does usually tend to play by its own rules. Sure. So, yeah, any kind of adherence to norms aren't really expected. But, yeah, I mean, we'll have to see if there's any kind of inside information that comes out or from sources close to the meeting of what kind of policies they're going to have to lay out or lay out during the meetings. But no official kind of statements are expected to come out officially from state media anyway or officials. So we'll have to keep our eyes open.
Thank you so much, Adam, for today's coverage. We'll speak to you again tomorrow.
You're very welcome. See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.